Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Who Cares About the Rock Hall, a podcast about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm your host, Joe Quazala. With me, as always, Kristen Studdard.
Continuing the streak of always being here, it is me, Kristen Studdard.
Perfect attendance so far.
Yes, thank you.
Very excited to have our guest with us here today. She is a music writer. You might even refer to her as the indie professor.
People do.
Publications like The Guardian have. She's written about indie music, has a book called Empire of Dirt. She's also a professor of anthropology, so you could go take a damn class if you wanted to.
Yeah, she has a PhD in indie music.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a wild thing.
Let's bring her in, Wendy Fonaro.
Hello, thank you.
Wendy, thank you for being a part of this.
So, yes, I do have a PhD in indie music, audience behavior at concerts, and the music industry.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how I fell into writing about music and basically writing for The Guardian.
So it's audience behavior at concerts, like likelihood of moshing,
yes.
Who's in the front, who's in the back.
Yes.
Amount of consumption of alcohol.
Not so much
chanting along, bringing signs.
You're just spitballing. Yeah. What could people do
what
at
could
a concert?
Well,
it
would be so. One of the things that I noticed that particularly when I started, I realized I needed to choose a genre of music, because when you go to different styles of music, you have different types of audience behavior. So, starting to look at indie music initially. American alternative, but then I did my research in the UK, and that was the indie scene. And I noticed that there were patterns of behavior. So you had people who behaved differently in different zones of the audience.
Oh, really?
Yes. So you get way more drinking in zone two.
Mm-hmm.
People are not interested or in zone three,
way in the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the people in the front are usually the youngest and most motivated.
Committed.
Yeah.
Know all the words, singing it to the people.
Yes. And that's where you would also get, well, initially when I started, there were mosh pits. Mosh pits languished pretty quickly when I started doing my research. And the really nice thing is, I realized that my research really spans the period of crowd surfing.
What year was your research?
Crowd surfing era.
So I went to the UK in 1993.
How she's just casually saying she went to the UK.
It's a
cool thing to do. Everybody knows it's cool.
Anytime Kristen brings up that she travels abroad,
it's a hit. People
this alleged
love
cosmopolitan
it.
Lifestyle that
I
she leads.
Very,
it's
you
very
can just,
transparent. Anyway,
you can when, tell. You can
anyway,
hear it
Wendy,
in my voice.
Please.
That's why we connect.
Yeah. Anthropologists do field work, and they tend to go in much more exotic destinations than England. But
yeah.
I had this idea that to be truly comprehensive and comparative, you should look at all societies. And therefore, I wanted to go to the backyard of where anthropology began and look at the very interesting activities that you find in Britain. So I ended up in London in 93, and I kept doing research, and my book came out in 2006, which meant I stopped writing in 2005. And what's amazing about that is that it's really this moment of revolution where mobile phones are being used at shows.
Oh.
And as right. soon as you start getting pervasive use of mobile phones at shows, crowd surfing stops.
Yeah.
Moshing becomes
That's
almost
so true.
Yeah, because people protect their phones.
Yeah.
So, and there's also an element, I would imagine, it becomes a more individual experience than a group experience, because you are on your phone, you're capturing something for
to share with
yourself,
your friends, for yourself.
As opposed to then interacting with other people. It kind of stops that a little bit.
It's sort of later that it's about sort of sharing it with your friends. Yeah. I ended up writing when my book came out, instead of just talking about what was in my book, I'm one of these people who always wants to push farther and look at what's next. I started discussing really the history of mobile phones entree into shows. And so initially they weren't camera.
People were protecting their phones. They just didn't want them to get smashed in the pit.
Yeah.
Or they didn't want to fall out if you're being crowd surfed or on.
Because suddenly you have an expensive thing in your pocket.
Yeah. And it's also at that point, it's in 2006 is where you've got the development of the phone to the degree that people are using it to film. And actually, mm-hmm. the one column that I wrote, I think that I got the most hate on, was saying the positive things about using mobile phones at shows.
Yeah.
But I don't want to hear that.
Now, ironically, I think filming a show is seen as more positive than when I wrote that piece, because at least you're paying attention, mm-hmm. as opposed to when you film something and then instantly are trying to broadcast it out. So I talked about the earliest days when people would really use the phone and just sort of lift it in the air and try and have they would call a friend, and it would be a way of sort of bringing someone outside the venue into the venue.
You would just lift up your phone.
Yeah,
in the
you'd
air
put it
and
at
like,
the.
Hey,
listen.
Yeah.
They're playing the song you like. Mm-hmm. You couldn't make it.
Listen to the worst
listen
possible
to
version.
The yes. terrible quality of it. Well, it's also like cameras back then were also so.
Which is funny.
You weren't allowed to bring cameras to shows.
Well, I mean the camera on your phone, the early camera.
I remember I was at a U2 concert and taking pictures. This was 2005, and taking pictures on my phone and the worst pictures.
Yeah,
you could
they're
even
just
imagine.
Bright lights. You're just taking pictures of shadowy
shapes. Yeah.
What were the big bands that were? What bands were big during this time? Like, what were the shows you were going to study the audience?
I'm trying to think because I remember one night. I was in Glasgow, and
I've been there.
Of course.
But I'm trying to remember what band was playing, because one of the things that I was starting to do is that I was looking at when people were filming. And so when the band came out on stage, so if I had a memory like yours, because I can't believe that you know that it was 2005.
Right.
That, yeah. Oh, of that's course. That's like probably in some weird list he has in his head of shows that he's been to.
It's the same thing of like, I can remember years the same way I can remember statistics about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yep.
My brain is broken and there's no hope.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that I didn't have a ticket to the show, so it was one of the few times in the UK where I bought from a scalper, because in the UK, that's a really, like, mafia type of thing, so I've always stayed away from that. Like, if you don't stand out in front of a show and say, do you want to buy a ticket?
It's not a fish show. You're not holding up your one finger in the air looking for a friendly face with an extra, you know what I mean?
No.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. So I remember one of these people, because I was not trying to interact with other audience members to buy a ticket, that he did then sell me a ticket. And then the thing that I noticed was that when the band came out, lots and lots of cameras, and then they were down. And the most striking thing was when they played their hit. So I should remember who it is. I don't know if it was.
Is it Franz Ferdinand?
If it was Franz Ferdinand, I would have been on the list. So
yeah, okay. I'm trying to remember of who I lived in Scotland in this time.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if it was Travis or I can't quite remember who it is, but I know that when they played their big hit, that all the cameras went up and the bodies stopped moving, and I was. That was the moment I went, wow.
And the things
have
the
really.
Floor. The bodies did not hit the floor. The feet hit the
feet,
floor.
And the feet stopped moving.
The feet stopped moving.
So it was the inverse of what you found previously. Now, while I say that, this summer in Eastern Europe, Franz Ferdinand did a show where I saw that there was a mosh pit going. So
ooh,
that was
really?
Pretty exciting.
I mean, I just think about, I remember the first time I ever crowd surfed was at a Violent Femmes concert.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
In high school. And I had bought a shirt and I had it wrapped around my waist.
Very cool. A very
and
cool
it
look.
Fell off while I was crowd surfing and I couldn't find it. I don't think I've ever seen someone crowd surf since the 90s. 90s. Like this was probably like 95, 96 when this happened. And I mean, have you ever crowd surfed, Joe?
I have not crowd surfed, but I've seen band members crowd surf.
Oh, band members, but not other people.
Not
in
other
the
people
crowd.
Jumping up on stage and then getting
well,
in.
No,
yeah,
or
right,
you would
no.
just find a dude near you
and
get on
and
his
then
shoulders,
lift him up, yeah.
And then you would just kind of like just move off.
But it see that's when I see it, it's usually more of like oh, a kind of a quirky thing that the lead singer is doing.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Just thinking about how much our phones have changed how we are at concerts really is like a fascinating. I bet there's like a part two to this kind of.
Yeah,
your research, the research mm-hmm. continues, Wendy.
Well, yeah, that's the one that I should write next.
Yeah.
But instead, I'm thinking about Halloween and Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. Hey,
and Day
everybody,
of the
Dead. Her master's degree is in Halloween. So she's a cool lady. get a clue, everybody.
The thing I was thinking immediately, have you guys seen the footage of Shaq at EDM concerts?
No.
No.
Wait, what?
Oh, my God. It's great. So Shaq has been like going to EDM concerts. And I think EDM concerts are maybe currently where you will see the most movement with the audience in the crowd.
Yeah.
You know?
Because people are on drugs and they're mm-hmm. not really interested.
They're not thinking about their phone.
Yeah.
They're not,
their phone. Yeah.
The word dance is in the title there.
Yeah.
So dancing is a large part of it. And that's one of the reasons why you're going to still find movement. But the movement is distributed differently in not just EDM, but various dance music genres. Mm-hmm. You didn't find like a tightly packed area and then sort of more space as you moved out. You found movement throughout the venue, and that was actually it was going to the same venue two nights, one night a dance night and one night an indie night, and I was like, oh, okay, I have to pick a genre. I can't just say
oh, you can't just say music, you can't just say concerts how it is. Wait, so what's Shaq doing at these EDM shows?
I mean, he's kind of jamming along with everybody in the crowd, but he's fucking 7 feet tall.
Yeah,
so it's
like,
insane
he cannot
looking.
Be in the front.
Yeah.
But also that's the other thing about EDM shows though, is you're not really looking at anything either. Mm-hmm. You know, you're what is this like unless you're like really into whatever helmet they're wearing. But like, you know what
right,
I'm saying?
Right, there's no
it's not like
instrument
you're
playing.
Watching an instrument being played. You're watching a DJ throw their hands in the air kind mm-hmm. of and like they're playing songs for you to move to and kind of interact with them. Wow, is EDM cool?
Okay, before
wait, is something just
there is orientation often towards speaker stacks. So the closer to that there is something to that. But even at EDM or where DJs are, not everyone's looking forward, but body orientation still tends to be forward,
I would imagine.
The DJ.
And sometimes they'll have like spectacle. They'll put on a big
so laser
light
show.
A visual.
This has been a fun road to go down, but
yes.
I think we need to talk about the Rock and Roll Hall
of
Fame.
You're right about
a little
that.
Bit.
I think that's correct.
Wendy, as someone who has covered music for a long time, I've got to imagine the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is something that maybe if hasn't been a focus is on the periphery. It's on the periphery of a lot of people. And I'm just curious what your experience is with the kind of the concept and you know the inductions, etc.
So I used the word nihilistic before.
Yes.
My answer is that I really like that your opening was do you care, and the answer is I don't care at all.
Mm-hmm. My man. Yes.
And to one of my friends I said I care so little, and he texted back why, and I said it's because I have no soul.
Okay,
but
yeah.
But what I meant by that is that I have a sense from having done my research that I have this deep sense of cultural relativism.
Mm-hmm.
And what I know about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ironically comes primarily from two sources. One is listening to Howard Stern talk about it
mm-hmm.
and his commentaries on it.
Yeah.
So that is really fun because he also tends to be critical, despite the fact he inducted
Bon Jovi.
Yeah. Which so I know all about that because I listened to him complain in preparation.
Rant and rave, yeah.
Yes. And recently there was a complaint because he was given a ballot to vote this year, and he was complaining about some of his staff members having ballots and thinking that they shouldn't vote. So mm-hmm. it brings up the issue of
who
votes.
Like Robin or
well, Baba Booey.
Yeah. Baba Booey. I don't know much about Howard Stern.
And hit him with the Hine. John Hine.
So but it's all men at Robin doesn't get a ballot. I'm just like trying to. I just want more women to be
from what we know. Yeah, from the public
information. Wait, why does Baba Booey get a ballot?
He's a big music fan.
Okay.
You know?
I mean, so am I.
But like, you're not on the most popular radio show of all time.
This was exactly, yeah. You're making the same points that Howard Stern was. You and know, he was like, who am I to vote on this? In his mind, only musicians should be voting on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Or experts.
Right.
Yeah. Does that mean that Letterman gets a ballot too?
He might,
like anyone,
because
who's done
he showed
an induction.
Up. A lot of times, if you've shown up and participated, like I know Lorde has a ballot, and that's probably because she participated in the Nirvana induction.
Okay, but she's also a musician.
True, but like that, there has to be mm-hmm. some other obviously thing to for them make you qualified.
Yeah.
But like you don't have a ballot, for example.
No, I don't.
But and I would say you're qualified.
Yeah, you could have a ballot.
Well, I it's interesting.
Take
the other
Baba Booey's ballot.
No,
he's
using his ballot. I would love to take Howard's ballot.
Oh, Howard's not voting?
No, he refuses.
No,
but
honestly, you gotta vote. It's your civic duty.
Actually, as I say that, I don't want his ballot. I would want to give it to someone who cared.
I don't care. I mean, I just want to. I'm just going.
You just want to affect change.
Me, yes.
So I know from him, and then one of my very good friends, Lindsay Parker, who writes for Yahoo Music and okay. also has a show, Volume West, for Sirius XM. She has a mind for music similar to the type of detail that you have.
Yeah.
And last year...
She is also broken.
Oh, I'm like, is she single? Joe, I'm just saying, two broken minds coming together.
But she's talked about the hall before.
List. Yes. And this last year she went because The Cure were being inducted. And... John Taylor was going to be
He inducted Roxy Music.
Yeah, so I was getting some live commentary, and then someone emailed me a message that sort of assumed that I didn't know anything about The Cure or that Trent Reznor was in Nine Inch Nails. And
a woman with a book called Empire of Dirt.
Wow. Yes, exactly. So her responses are so brilliant that... I almost wanted to just take them and send them to this guy, but I decided to just not engage. I figured if I've told you that I got a PhD in indie music and you think you need to tell me that we are not having wonderful communication.
Yeah, that's a disconnect. Mm-hmm. I feel, in my opinion.
Did you watch the induction ceremony or parts of it, bits of it?
No, I had, again,
wait,
I had
oh, wait,
no
interest.
Where
was your friend seated, do you know? Did she have good seats?
Well, I know that she was able to send me a photo of the sticker that was on Robert Smith's guitar.
Okay, oh, wow. So she had good seats.
Did she have a press pass?
Yes.
Then that would have been it.
There we go.
Yeah. Yes, she was explaining that one of the drummer on one of the albums, I think it was the album where they started, I think, with Shake Dog Shake.
Andy Anderson.
Joe knows all about this.
So that there was a sticker for that.
He had just passed.
Yes,
like a few
exactly.
months before.
Yeah. So this was part of her rant that this person said that I should look it up on YouTube to listen to this, and that was really a moment.
Yeah.
So isn't the show like 9 hours long?
Yeah, it is 5 hours long.
It's literally 5 hours.
Feels that way. But people played more music this year. I liked the bands this year for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't talk as much, which was good. Good God. I mean, just
even watching the
edited down speeches at some of these ceremonies, I truly am astonished that they're allowed to continue speaking.
Yeah, I know. It's like what you do is you let them all speak, hoping that one of them will say something interesting. But then you waste roughly 45 minutes for, 2 minutes.
So they can cut it down to 5 minutes on television.
Well, honestly, I think that's reasonable. One of the reasons I would never want to go is because if this is your moment in the sun, really, do you want to be, have that music play you off the stage? With the idea that it's for a television show. So in my mind, talk as much as you want, bore the audience as much as you want, and then make a good television show out of it.
Oh, but they don't watch. They don't. They make the TV show is still too long.
Yeah, I mean, I think the TV show is meant to be experienced however you want it.
It can be a very a la carte experience.
Like, you go find the band you want, maybe watch a little bit of this if you don't want to see this person that. I mean, I'm the only one sitting down going,
nope,
here we go
now
for a 3-hour experience.
Now me too, even though I was there live for 5 hours, and then I get to rewatch it again for 3.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
I know, it's, you know, this is a hell of my choosing. You know, I've done it. I locked myself in the cell.
Wendy, let's talk about the group you wanted to talk about, Joy Division New Order.
Yeah.
Not currently inducted, but I'm curious why them?
Well, in my mind, that just proves why I don't care about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I'd like to start with Joy Division, like mm-hmm. one of the most influential bands. The number of reasons of why they are important is enormous. Another new book just came out about Joy Division by John Savage, a really great British journalist, not the Australian John Savage. I guess that's a great name for music journalists. But one of the things is that band is so influential, and as well, it really represents a sea change in terms of an aesthetic. And it's interesting because last night I went to a memoir reading of Rob Zabrecki, who used to be in this band Possum Dixon and now is a magician. But one of
just a classic switch. Everybody, it's like when you're done rocking, you gotta turn to magic. It's a natural. Some people become record producers, and other people become magicians.
What was the name of the band again?
Possum Dixon,
which I
and
heard
they were part of the Silver Lake scene. So when that scene that emerged back. They were the heart and center of that.
Who else was in the Silver Lake scene?
Oh, I can't remember. Because you want to know where I was? I was
in
the
UK. People, get a clue.
Yes,
come on,
exactly.
Everybody's talking about it. You can tell. Also, Possum Dixon is the kind of name that we were talking about in our last episode, where it's like, man, if they had made it big, everyone would be like, oh, you're going, yeah. My dad's really into Possum Dixon, like blah, 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 blah. But as a band that did not get big, it is a ridiculous name.
There's a threshold, there's like a tipping point where if you become famous enough, doesn't matter how crazy your name
Goo Goo
is.
Dolls.
You're just like, Death Cab for Cutie.
Sure, no problem.
Yeah.
But Possum Dixon, that would be, that's one of those.
So he was talking about when he was like 12, 13, and his older brother came to him and said, he had like, I think, Foreigner and Styx and Journey and said, mm-hmm. this is the future of rock.
That's so funny.
And he went.
That's hysterical.
No. Mm-hmm. He was at that point going to LA punk shows. And in his mind, this was the opposite of what rock should be. And it makes me think of the title of Simon Reynolds' book, Rip It Up and Start Again. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, the fact that all of these bands, these post-punk bands, the bands that are really meaningful for the post-baby boomer generation has really been just totally ignored by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That one, it makes me go, okay, what is rock and roll? It has nothing to do with this interesting, intellectual, deconstructionist sort of art vein of music. And it doesn't really speak to a culture outside of American culture.
Yeah, that part specifically. I thought Roxy Music's induction
this year. Yeah, it bodes well.
Was
it's like
surprising
it's
in a very...
It's opening the tributary.
Yeah, in a good way, showing that if a group is not monumental in America, that they can still make it. And like what you're saying about post-punk has been fully ignored up until, again, this year with The Cure.
Well, it's
that's when they finally broke
it's
through.
It's like post-punk is like the bridge to new wave, right? Would you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like post-punk.
Post-punk, goth.
Yeah.
Then, and actually, like, at the same time as post-punk, you did have things like the New Romantics. So, but those were bands that actually were big. The 83 crop had bands that really made it big in America, like Duran Duran and Culture Club and things like that. But some of the less popular bands and the underground bands and the bands that became super influential or ones that were part of the landscape of music, because it wasn't like Britain was ignored before that.
Obviously, an invasion or two.
Yeah, but they were the boomer bands. They were the bands that are that generation of the 60s. And then I think that in the period where they've been trying to do inclusiveness, that they've been going back in time and choosing people who are overlooked. So actually, I was wondering, is Donna Summer in the...
Yes,
so,
she is.
Yeah, so that would be like, okay, we're going to include other genres of music. Let's get some disco in there. Mm-hmm. So instead, it keeps looking backward as opposed to these bands forward.
The 60s, they're squeezing it dry right now. And then they're now the 70s. They're like, ooh, 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 let's go to the second and third tier. What else have we got before they will really get to the 80s, I feel like.
There's a weird narrative often in music writing and music history that people have talked about before. Like, there's a book that Michael Azarad wrote called Our Band Could Be Your Life, and he touches on this, which I think is really interesting, which is sometimes you'll be watching like a documentary on music, and they'll be talking about CBGBs and Talking Heads and the Sex Pistols and the Ramones, and the next thing they talk about is Nirvana. And you're like, I'm sorry, slow down.
Wait, what?
There's this whole thing that for whatever reason isn't as sexy and isn't narratively doesn't have an arc the way that you want to construct when you're making a history of music.
And I would say, and I think you might like this, that it tends to be a really masculine arc. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that took me away from wanting to do research in the United States was that at the time that alternative music was developing here, it was college rock, and it was very, very masculine. So bands like Husker Du, House of Freaks, and like Sub Pop. Sub Pop still has a masculine vibe. It was a world where women could be there, but they sort of had to play by aggressive sounds. And I really liked that sort of sweeter legacy that would come from something like the Beatles or the Beach Boys. So if you combine like that sort of sweet pop with this idea of post-punk, of rebellion, that really ends up being the heart and soul of what indie was. And I mean, I'm going to use was, because right now, whatever that scene is, it doesn't really exist in the same way.
Indie is so different right now. But when I think about indie music, I think about like the big explosion of 2000, of like the early 2000s, of like the Strokes, the Hives, like that whole time. And I think of that as like, or like Interpol, like Death Cab for Cutie, like all of those bands. And I think about that as an incredibly masculine time. I think of that as like a time when we didn't have any female fronted bands that were breaking through in this incredibly popular like garage rock explosion happening, and we have no female fronted bands. We have no, like, you get like the Donnas, who are kind of a novelty act in a way to people,
right? The only like the Yeah Yeah Yeahs was also part of that scene, but also, I mean, didn't really hit at the same time, even though they were contemporaries.
Yeah,
it took a little longer for people to kind of wake up to that.
That time period, I would actually put it to 1999. And there's something really remarkable that happens at that point. And it really is the shift that happens because of the internet. The UK had always led in terms of an independent scene because they had a weekly press rather than a monthly press. We had national magazines like Rolling Stone and Spin. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't have the same news cycle as a weekly press. So they were constantly giving oxygen, and it had this incredible incredibly vital scene. And women were very much a part of that scene. I mean, I think of some of my favorite bands, Curve, Slow Dive, Elastica. Elastica, mm-hmm.
Elastica,
another band.
They broke through. Yeah.
Please, please. They should be in a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I feel like Elastica in America is considered like a one-hit wonder.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Connection.
Yeah.
Is made.
Yeah, which was used in a beer commercial at the Super Bowl.
And I think
Bowl.
It was used in like every movie in, or every
movie trailer. And
it was, in the, it was
in the Captain Marvel trailer.
Yeah. I love, I mean, it's a great, I like Elastica. I love that song. I love that mm-hmm. style of singing. I mean, like taking Riot Girl to its kind of dancier conclusion mm-hmm. is very much like Le Tigre is why I love bands that are like that. But I guess I think of, I guess there just has never been a big wave of music that hasn't been masculine in its...
In the U.S.
In the U.S.
But so I mean, in the U.K., it was so co-ed.
When I'm thinking even like about like the post-punk bands that had... that they had a lot of female-fronted post-punk bands in the late 70s, early 80s in the U.K.
Yeah, like
Slits, the Waitresses.
Susan the Banshees.
Susan yeah. the Banshees. Like you had like all of the Raincoats, yeah?
Yeah.
Like all that like in the late 70s. But there was... That never really happened over here. Yeah.
Yeah, it is America's aversion to... Women.
Women.
Overall, across not just music, but yeah. One of the things that's difficult about determining if a band is worthy for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, ultimately, is that music is subjective, right? How can you
yes.
determine one group or another? It seems like a fool's errand. So, me being a fool, I have put together a list of criteria that I think if you do well with these categories, you have a good case for induction. And so, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to see how Joy Division New Order stacks up.
Hell yeah.
We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. We hope you had a nice break. We hope over your break...
you learned the true meaning of Halloween.
Yes. Whatever that means to you, whether it's reading up on Wikipedia, whether it's looking within yourself to determine...
Whether it's finding out why ghosts are notoriously white-sheeted. And guess what? It's not racist, and I'm so glad.
Wow. So let's talk about Joy Division / New Order. And I think maybe one of the first things just to kind of talk about is I did kind of force Wendy to talk about New Order as well, because I feel very strongly that the two should be inducted at the same time.
So this to me is really interesting, because that would be like, what about a band like Primal Scream with Bobby Gillespie? Would it be Bobby Gillespie, Primal Scream, and Jesus and Mary Chain? I mean, there are so many bands where you had member overlaps. Mm-hmm. To me, they seem very, they're discreet. So it's,
yeah.
I think that they are both worthy,
mm-hmm.
but I think of them as independently worthy because I see their legacies as being separate. New Order's legacy is so strongly in the world of electronica, and the bands that you were mentioning from the American indie scene, which I was yeah. going to say the push for that was the popularization of Pitchfork, which then
that is true.
That made it so that instead of a weekly news cycle, you had a daily news cycle, and it brought all of this oxygen to the scene. And you mentioned Interpol, and what band is Interpol most influenced by? I mean, it's Joy Division.
Joy Division, mm-hmm. yeah.
Doesn't sound like New Order at all. So,
no. Although, I will say that you can kind... I think you can tell where Joy Division was headed at that last album, and I do think it is in a New Order direction. Like, I think the song Ceremony by New Order sounds to me like a... And it was partially written by Ian Curtis. Anyway, here are my major bullet points for why I think they need to be inducted together. One is that there's precedent for this kind of thing within the hall already.
So that's what I wanted to know. What is the precedent
so
for
Parliament
that?
And Funkadelic inducted as one entity. The Faces and Small Faces
oh, yeah.
were inducted as one entity. Now, in both those groups, especially like if you look at Faces and Small Faces, the personnel change was much more drastic than from Joy Division to New Order. Obviously, because after Ian Curtis died, then the members of Joy Division formed New Order and brought in Jillian Gilbert. Very little in terms of personnel change, right? It's the same group of people.
And same manager.
Same label. Yeah.
Tony in his same Svengali-ish role.
Right. Yeah, Tony Wilson at Factory Records.
Yes.
So there's that. I also think, let's say you just induct Joy Division. Now New Order is at the bottom of the heap in terms of priority. And mostly what you're doing is you're saying fuck you to the one woman you could have inducted in this whole group, which is not a good look for the hall. And I also, New Order plays Joy Division songs at the end of their concerts now.
Oh.
I mean, when you just look at the members, it to me, it is no different than Peter Gabriel Genesis to Phil Collins Genesis. It is not really, I mean, when you think of...
So how did they do that?
They just inducted Genesis.
Everybody
because luckily for them...
There's enough room in the hall for everybody. It's not a physical institution. You can induct them all. So who cares?
Sometimes it's like semantic, right? Like they, yeah. Like Joy Division chose to change their name because they had made an agreement that if one of them left the group for whatever reason, they would change the name.
They should have named it Joy United.
Good God. Or there's just so many groups that are already in the hall who kept their name after personnel changes, whether it's Van Halen or AC/DC or whatever, that I think the transition from Joy Division to New Order is not as drastic.
I mean, even things like the Moody Blues, like they stayed the same band, but they had two different like genre, like time.
And we
like,
talked about Deep Purple
or Deep
too.
Purple. It's like the Hush Deep Purple versus the
Smoke on the Water
Deep Purple is different.
So eventually, because I don't care about,
but
here's
She's
the
like,
thing:
put them in. Who cares?
Yeah. So at the end of the day, my position would always be. Not so much about caring who's in, but really more wanting more people in.
Yes, that's the other thing, is you're knocking off two, technically, snubs with one, which is what you want to do. One of the major problems with the hall is that there's this backlog of worthy inductees, and why would you want to take a future slot away from someone because you decided to chop up Joy Division and New Order?
You know,
why don't they just do a year of reparations and go country by country and then just put in like 150 bands to deal
with each of those? We would still be at that induction ceremony right now. That would roughly take, and this is a conservative estimate, 527 hours.
Well, and also, it's I can't believe I am about to say this. It's just because I like have this knowledge now, and I really can't believe that these words. But there is not a lack of representation of British bands in the hall. They just don't care as much. Like, you know, last year's class was
extremely British. Radiohead, Roxy Music, Def Leppard, The Zombies, The Cure,
and The Zombies. Yeah. So five of the seven inductees, and every band last year.
Yes, correct.
There's only two American women solo artists were inducted, and then five British bands. Yeah.
So Joy Division / New Order became eligible for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in the 2004 induction ceremony. And the first category is critical acclaim. Now, I don't know that I can think of a band, especially Joy Division, that made critics lose their minds more than them. I mean, this is, if you talk about a critical darling, like, it was like a wet dream for critics.
I mean, there are almost every list that comes out of the UK of most important bands, most influential bands, they would be listed on that. I mean, they have this interesting issue where they had their first album come out. There was a change in the press at that time where the type of music that they were doing, you used to have a press that was covering all sorts of genres of music. It wasn't specialized. The NME, Sounds, Melody Maker, they were not focusing on youth music or rock and roll or punk or any of that. And then that happened in the mid-70s. So those papers that were having this critical discourse of saying certain music, you know, has an aesthetic quality of value, they were focused on the type of music that Joy Division did. And so you've got Unknown Pleasures, and then you also have this other news story that happens at the same time that the second album is coming out, where you've got, you know, the death of the lead singer. Mm-hmm. So that adds a gravitas to everything that the band had done as well, which
losing, I mean, that is often catalyzing for a band's popularity and also for critical acclaim too.
Absolutely. You know, the kind of martyrdom.
The martyrdom, the death of the icon.
In the UK as well, there's a really big thing about the sort of working class hero. And it's one of the reasons why consistently you'll get bands from Manchester or Liverpool or in areas right around there that end up uniting the country, because it's a really working class area.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's something that was that worked for Arctic Monkeys. It's something that worked for Oasis.
Another band name that is just a crime. Arctic Monkeys is a fucking crime of a band name, because they are not a bad band.
No.
But they have the stupidest band name. It is embarrassing. They should be embarrassed.
Oh no, I love them.
Do you love their name though?
Wait, I have no problem with their name, because
their name,
at the same time, Domino had another band called Test Icicles.
I'd rather Test Icicles.
The comparison enough to be like, oh, I'm going to go with Arctic Monkeys.
Arctic Monkeys is a terrible... It's embarrassing. It's an embarrassing name. No one wants merch that says Arctic Monkeys on it. It is an embarrassing bad name.
Okay,
it's a bad
I'm going to make a case for
Please.
Why it's a good name.
Okay,
go off.
I can't wait.
All right. So one of the things that you very often find animal names for bands.
Yes.
And it's really important for a band that you have an animal that lives in groups.
Yeah.
So
wait, what? Okay.
Because if you're a band,
you can represent the band with the rhinos.
Yeah. So for example, like one of the things that's why you've got lots of wolf bands, because wolves are in packs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But coyote tends to be singular artists, because coyotes don't roam in packs.
Interesting.
And so
I think you're giving bands a lot of credit in terms of how they think of good names.
Yeah, this is an anthropologist answer if I've ever
it's
heard
sort
one.
Of why it's what I would say is no one's thinking that, but it's like those principles are there. It's also why rat is better than squirrel.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, also, rat is fucking cool, and squirrel
is lame. It's like
is
almost
lame.
The construction
Except,
of the syllable
but
and
the
consonants.
But here's the thing. Monkey is not cool.
But
monkey
they
is
group
not cool.
animals, and
doesn't
then they have
matter.
To huddle together when it's
doesn't
cold.
Doesn't matter. Monkey is not cool. Monkey is a
well,
not,
not
cool
it's
name.
It's not cool. It's cold, because
it's Arctic,
Arctic
monkey.
Baby.
How dare you? I just, sorry for the
Wendy,
aside. I will.
You mentioned
I remain
lists,
unchanged.
Because
yeah.
that's sometimes a way that we can kind of measure the critical response to something.
Yeah.
As if these bands wind up on lists. And one of the ones that we go back to a lot is the 500 Greatest Albums list that Rolling Stone released. Now, this is a question for both of you. Do you think Joy Division or New Order are on the list of the 500
now,
greatest albums?
Here's where Kristen, who did drop a lot of post-punk female-fronted band names
Knowledge.
From
yeah.
the late 70s, early 80s, comes and confesses her limited knowledge of
the discography,
of
maybe
the discography of Joy Division and New Order. I mean, I know the songs. I know many of the songs, but mm-hmm. I'm not. I am by no means an expert.
I'll catch you up.
Yes, please.
So Joy Division had two albums
before their lead singer died.
Yeah, before
but
he
they also
suicide.
Had
he committed suicide.
They also had limited. They did these singles as well that would not show up on albums.
So that's an important distinction, because both bands would release a lot of singles and not put them on albums. So both of the groups had albums called Substance, which were kind of singles collections, greatest hits collections,
okay.
and were very popular because you could finally have these songs. The songs, most of the songs
which
that you know.
Which is like kind of what The Cure did too. That's
a little
interesting.
Bit. So the two albums from Joy Division are Unknown Pleasures and Closer.
Okay.
And then of New Order's, again, so they had an album called Substance, like Joy Division.
Uh-huh.
Another reason why maybe they should be inducted together.
Do you feel like he's made his case? I feel like he's done a good job. To me,
end of the day, I'm like...
Put them all in.
Yeah.
Great.
Like, if I don't care... Yes. More people at the party.
You and me, Wendy.
Exactly.
We're in this together. I'm sorry. Tell me
so
what's
new
on these albums.
I would say New Order there is that Substance album, and then there's an album called Power, Corruption, and Lives that is kind of
and what's on
canonized. That? Age of Consent is on there. But again, most of New Order's singles that you know are not album.
Really?
Yeah.
Like what?
Like Blue Monday. Blue Monday
is you know the story with Blue Monday, which is the 12-inch single. They actually lost either 2 or 5 pence for every one that they sold.
What?
It was the packaging. So what happened
is... Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. Peter Saville came up with this amazing... It's a floppy disk. So this is you know, at the time of the computer revolution... Uh-huh. Does this amazing 12-inch single cover, and no one actually checks the cost. And he decides to do this this thing that would actually make it so that there's a hole in the sleeve. So the process of removing it to make it look like a floppy disk is why they lost the money. I think it cost 5p to do that, so that they ended up losing 2 pence for every single that they sold of the largest selling,
it's the largest selling 12-inch of all time.
Of all time. And they lost money on it.
Oh.
So, and Bernard one time said that it was so typical for them that they lost money for what wasn't there.
Yeah. Oh,
right. Yeah.
To remove the circle, to take the hole out.
Okay.
You know?
So, what do you guys think? Any representation on this album's list?
Rolling Stone, I'm going to say no.
You're going to say nothing from either Joy Division or New Order.
And here's I'm going to say in the UK, every list
every
will
have. NME, oh, yeah. It's top 20 slots is that.
Now,
Kristen, what do you think?
All right. I think if there were going to be an album of one of those bands, it would be Joy Division.
Okay.
And I think if it was going to be one of the two... So here's the thing about these albums that they put on the list. There, you've got, because you have the two choices, the first being the debut, which everyone likes to put the debut on there.
Or do you have one that really gelled
and also the kind of like last album by the iconic person.
Right.
So
yeah.
We're going to have to talk about the album cover for the first album at some point.
Oh my God.
What's on it? What is it?
So Unknown Pleasures is that iconic, like kind of radio waves that look like mountains.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like one of the
most... That's the Urban Outfitters. We'll get to that in the ubiquity of their, their branding.
So what do you make a choice, Kristen?
I think that if there is one album, it's going to be the one with the iconic cover, Unknown Pleasures. And I think that would be the one that would be on there. And I think we're looking in the early 400s, early to mid 400s, if it's on there.
Okay, guys, here's the tea.
Oh, my God. Joe, if this is like number 25, I will like flip a table.
The second album, Closer, is on the list.
God damn it.
And it's at 157.
God damn it.
And... Substance, the New Order compilation album.
Oh my gosh.
Is on here at 363.
Rock critics be loving. Wow.
Yeah. So
how about that?
When it comes down to classic albums, I think this is a group that does very well. And then let's transition into talking about iconic, recognizable songs.
Yes.
When it comes to Joy Division, obviously, Love Will Tear Us Apart. That's the big one that everybody knows.
Which one is that on? Is that on an album? It's not on an album.
It's not on an album.
Oh my
you will see that their biggest singles are not on albums.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
Although with Stranger Things, Atmosphere is now having this surge.
Oh. People are listening to that song, Atmosphere.
People like you find it easy. Walking on air.
Was it in the most recent season?
No, season one.
In the first season.
And
I don't
in
it.
The first episode, when the older brother is giving the tape to the younger brother, he says it has all the best stuff. It has The Clash. It has Joy Division. It has Television and one other band. I can't remember.
You know what? Honestly, the brother knows what's up.
Totally.
And I would say, with Joy Division, there's not, if you're just kind of casually listening to music, there aren't other songs that you would know, but I would say worth mentioning She's Lost Control. Disorder.
I've been waiting for a guy to come and take me by the hand. Cause these sensations make me feel the pleasures of a normal man. These sensations spare the insults, leave them for another day.
And transmission.
Radio. Live transmission.
And then, okay, if we're talking New Order, I think the iconic is Blue Monday.
Which, by the way, Divine Comedy in their single or at the Indie Disco says every night the last song they play is Blue Monday. Mm-hmm. So.
And Divine Comedy is a...
An Irish band.
An Irish band. I'm like, that is a British band. I know that is not an American band.
Right, yeah, obviously.
I was feeling it.
But then I would,
Temptation.
Yes, Temptation is a great one. And I would throw Bizarre Love Triangle
Obviously. Probably yes.
Up there in the top tier.
Favorite song for so long.
It's such a great song. And also shouts to the Frente cover.
Every time I see you falling, I get down on my knees and pray. I'm waiting for that final moment. You say the words that I can't say.
I have to admit, the first time I heard Blue Monday was it was covered by that band Orgy. Then I would also, Age of Consent is a huge recognizable song.
And I'm not the kind of light to tell you just what you want me to. You're not the kind that needs to tell me about the birds and the bees.
I'd say True Faith also.
Yes.
Then I would put Ceremony up there too. So a lot of songs from this group that I think, I think the problem though with this group is you hear the song title and you're like, I don't know that. What is it? And then you hear it and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
They don't really say Blue Monday, do they?
Yeah.
No.
They don't really say Bizarre Love.
Yeah.
Also, an embarrassing thing about me is I often conflate New Order and Erasure.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah. That's embarrassing something you gotta figure out.
I know. On your own.
Well, there is something to that. Which what I would say is there were very different audiences for New Order in the United States and in the UK. In the UK, they were really seen as a very masculine, lager lout type of band. And then they came to the US and their audiences were female and also gay.
Yeah.
So you had... They were a dance band
exactly.
in the US. And in the UK, they were...
They were
tough
a pub
nail.
Band, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Next category is commercial success. Especially with the New Order equation, you know, tens of millions of records sold. They really kind of commercially blew up, especially in America, with the New Order stuff.
Really quick.
Yeah.
So Ian Curtis commits suicide, and then they add a woman to the band?
So, I mean, Ian Curtis commits suicide the day before they're supposed to go on their American tour.
Whoa, he really did not want to come here.
No, it was very complicated.
Yeah,
what's
there
up?
Was a looming divorce. He had epilepsy, which was getting worse, and he was depressed. Like, there's a lot going on with poor Ian Curtis.
Okay, that was a bad joke.
And
actually
was
back.
From Macclesfield, which is actually about 15-20 minutes outside of Manchester. And there is a landmark for him there that he's got one of those blue plaques. So
yeah. Next category is longevity. Now, Joy Division, it was like, you know, just a few years. But then once you tack on New Order, you're taking it into, so the first Unknown Pleasures was around 1979, and then I would say New Order was still kind of doing important, crucial work into the 90s, like maybe until like 93.
Is New Order still touring? Is that what you were saying?
They are.
Yeah, they were at the Hollywood Bowl not long ago.
Really?
In the 2000s, there was a split where Peter Hook and Bernard and Stephen and Jillian parted ways. And they had a similar idea that if it wasn't the same thing,
you have to rename it.
Yeah. But this is one of those insane things with Manchester where lightning should not strike twice. So there was a little bit of time where some of the original New Order members did a band called Bad Lieutenant, and Peter Hook was doing his own thing. But then they decided to bring back Jillian, and at that point, they are touring as New Order. So what you've got now is Peter Hook and the Light, who is the bass player, and part of the one of the things that makes Joy Division and New Order so distinct is that the melody line is played on the bass rather than the guitar. And it makes it so one of these situations where not having the bass player is like not
Which
having
is
a
not
singer.
Usually,
you lose part of the sound,
like,
yeah.
Usually the bass, dare I won't say that the bass is
replaceable.
The bass.
But in a lot of groups, yeah, if you replace the bass player, it doesn't really change much to the sound. But one of the crucial things to, like you said, both these groups is that the bass is played very, it was a function of the fact that Peter Hook couldn't hear himself when
That's
he was
true.
Playing live. So he was like playing as high as he could on the bass so that he could hear it. And then it became this distinctive sound that not only is their distinctive sound, but I think really influenced a lot of post-punk, because the bass is present in a lot of post-punk bands.
Yes. Yes. And it becomes the idea that that's playing the melody line is really atypical. So in terms of, this is probably another category, the degree of influence on other artists,
this is
would
perfect.
Be huge.
This is the next category we can yeah. seamlessly, but we should note, so New Order still does, just without Peter
but
Hook.
But without
the
Peter Hook.
Yeah,
and
Peter Hook is also playing, but he's doing this really remarkable thing, which is he started at the beginning of his catalog, and he is playing every song he has ever written as a tour.
Oh, I was like, in his basement.
No. So there's like, so there'll be, at the show, there'll be a Joy Division, like, album and like the hits, and then there'll be a New Order album and the hits. I wonder when they broke up in around, I think around 93, when I think the Revenge and Monaco, Bernard did a record with Johnny Marr from the Smiths, and that I think they were Monaco, they were Revenge, and then Peter Hook did an album called Monaco. So I'm not sure how that'll fit in the sequence, but it is this comprehensive playing live of songs.
He plays every song he's ever written all at once.
One New Order album, one Joy Division album, and then the hits.
It's
at
very
each
interesting
of these shows.
To me that he's allowed to do this. So you have two bands essentially touring with the same music.
Yes.
In a sense, yeah.
But the New Order does what I like to think of as the hits hurt, which is really a compliment. It's they're just playing the hits and they'll add one or two new songs of whatever their last album. But the actual show itself does not transform that much. So it's a bit like when you see the Mike Love Beach Boys, where you're going to hear all the songs you love. You're going to love it. And the other one is a much more of almost like a giant, I think of it like Kraftwerk art project of, I am going to play these songs, some of them that were never, ever played live.
Because they were just like on the album.
They were on the album.
As we all know. So the albums were not where they'd put all their popular songs.
Nope.
They were like, you know what? We're going to hide some other songs out on these albums.
So yes. So they're each doing really remarkable and interesting things, just different. And I have to say, I've gone to far more Peter Hook and the Light shows than of the New Order.
All right. Yeah, the next category is innovation influence. We've touched on it as we often do at this point, because sometimes it's hard not to. Yeah. But
so this might be the time to talk about the Pulsar shirt, because the ubiquitousness of that shirt, and it's, I think that there should be a scholarly paper just about the phenomenon of that waveform.
I sense another degree.
Someone else needs to write it. But I mean, there's a Mickey Mouse head with the Pulsar design on it. You've got a tie that's got, instead of the exact replication, they've got cats on it instead.
Yeah, no, that's a threadless design. Shout out my old workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. The iconography of both groups, and we're really talking about Peter Saville is the designer, the artist who created all of their album covers.
Yes. So is there another iconic album cover that I would know just by you describing it or talking about
That's
it?
The one. I mean, Closer has, like, it's an image of... it's almost
statuary.
A statue, yeah, where there's like a coffin. You might recognize it if you saw it.
Okay.
And then Power Corruption and Lies has like this, it's like flowers. But I saw a Joy Division t-shirt yesterday. I mean, like, it's just, it's one of those things that you can't escape.
That is a very, it is got the Urban Outfitters seal of approval. Yeah. It will never die. It is up there. It's just so iconic.
One of the things that I wonder is, do you know the band? Do you know the connection? And it's really, so as an anthropologist,
Name five of their albums.
No, I mean it as a delicate question.
Of course.
Because often I think that when people ask, do you know the band, it's meant to ridicule them.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like when Jimmy Kimmel makes up band names at Coachella and it's done to make fun of the individual. Mm-hmm. But I'm really interested in that idea, has it moved so far away from its original source that it exists out in the world as a type of visual legacy that isn't even necessarily associated with the music?
Yeah, it's like a cultural totem. It's more like, I guess, like a countercultural totem, if you will. It's something that just says, you're wearing that shirt, you're saying, I am counterculture. It's not necessarily,
I'm underground.
I don't have to know this band to know what it means when I wear this shirt or when I see someone in that shirt.
I think,
you know,
that's really brilliant. I love that.
Well, thank you. She's got a PhD, everybody. You heard
it. I know. I love that. And I mean, I think that's a really wonderful explanation. And I've talked to a number of people and no one has been quite so articulate in talking about that transformation.
Wow, so Wendy's giving Kristen a diploma right now. She just had it
great.
In her back pocket.
Yeah, honestly. And you know what? We're flying back to the UK where people truly understand us. All right.
So our last category is, does my mom know who they are? Which this speaks to kind of cultural saturation, right? Has it made its way to my mom in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? And the answer is no, unfortunately. It did not register with her, the name. Now, some of the New Order songs, I wouldn't be shocked if she heard them and went, oh, I hear this. I know this song, but I didn't know that it was the group. But just from name alone, it did not register.
I didn't ask my mom. My phone is somewhere else. But I think that my mom does know who New Order is.
Okay.
Because my mom is very into, she listens to XRT in Chicago, and that is a very new wavy alt radio kind of band that she would know.
And
who
I
they
mean
are.
Like, for example, New Order was in all those John Hughes films. The fact that New Order and Joy Division are absolute fabric of character development in Stranger Things, particularly. Like, that is a character is in part based on this is the music he listens to.
Yes.
He doesn't fit in to the U.S. He's an oddball in so many ways. It isn't even just an oddball in that town, but an oddball in that world. And that music represents that. And so I would be sort of bummed if your mother knew who it was. I would want your...
The grandchildren
should know.
It's a point of pride.
True counterculture.
Yeah. For it not to have reached my mom, in a sense. Sorry, Mom. All right. Let's do our verdict. Should they be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Will they and when? We'll start with Kristen.
All right. Listen up. I think they should. And I think they should do it Joe Quesada style at the same damn time. And I think they will get in. I think that the inclusion of Roxy Music, I think of the 2019 British invasion of the Corridor of Fame, has really bodes well for them. Have they ever been on the ballot?
They've never been on a ballot.
I think we're going to be scraping those 70s for a while before we hit true post-punk new wave. Like, they're not so popular. They're not the Cure that I see them getting in sooner. I think it's going to be about 7 years. I think we're looking between 5 to 10 years.
Fair.
That's my thoughts.
Thank you, Kristen. Wendy, what do you think? I think should we know?
Well, should, absolutely. Yeah. I think that it to me, it's nonsense.
There's no hall until they're in it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. In my mind, there is no hall until they're in it. When I would take a sort of weirdly more personal bent, I would love it if the breach was somehow mended, which, by the way, that is a bit like hoping for the Smiths to get back together. That's a bit like hoping that the Gallagher brothers would stop fighting. The fact that I even had that as a desire would probably be verboten for the majority of those participants. But the idea that doing something like that and not being together is a little bit heartbreaking to me. So
maybe the hall can mend all wounds.
We've seen it happen quite a bit with a lot of groups. I mean, it's sometimes that is the thing that will bring a group together.
Yeah. Then that should happen,
but often
in the next 3 years.
Groups.
You're going to say the next three?
No, it's not really a guess. That was more like projecting desire.
I like it as a guess.
Wait, now remind me, are Dire Straits British? They're British,
they
right?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I did it.
And they didn't, they're
a thing.
You can tell they're British because they didn't really show up.
But then also, like, I do think that sometimes it's harder to get those British bands because they don't care as much to reunite to for us.
I don't think I'm gonna just say one more thing. One
Please.
Of the big problems is that because of who's in there, to me it always says this does not represent you. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of those reasons those British bands don't care is because the entire legacy of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame does not look like their world. It does not look like the Rip It Up and Start Again. It looks like the baby boomer world. And it isn't necessarily a world that you want to join. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a little bit like, do I want to be knighted by the Queen? And Robert Smith said no to that. So I'm sort of excited that he was willing
to
show.
Be knighted?
I didn't.
I don't think it was an offer, but he's
someone
he's
asked
like,
him,
someone like, would you? And he's like, fuck no.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is like the Cure nearly didn't show up to the induction. But you could tell when they were there and
they
played.
They were so happy.
They loved it.
It was great.
And it like really meant something to them. And it was kind of beautiful, especially to see a moody goth group be kind of watch them have their minds changed in front of you.
Yeah, so maybe the Cure will make it so we can have more goth bands.
This
like
is why
Bauhaus
we can have nice things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe we can have nice things now.
Finally. I think with the Cure, especially through it is we get to knock down the next dominoes of post-punk. And I think if you're doing it in order, a new order, The Joy Division and New Order should have come first.
Yes.
So they would make sense as the next one, although since they haven't been on a ballot, Depeche Mode's been on a ballot, the Smiths have been on a ballot, it seems like they are probably going to be next in line.
Yeah.
But I think after Depeche Mode and the Smiths, I think Joy Division New Order is going to be up. I could even see them on the ballot this year. It's going to happen very soon. And I'm going to say about 5 years is when I think it's going to happen, when they're going to get in. Because I think they should, and I think they will. Now, let's say they get inducted. There's no question as to the band members, because there haven't really been lineup changes. It's Ian Curtis, it's Peter Hook, Bernard Sumner, and Stephen Morris. And then, if you're including New Order, then you get Jillian Gilbert in there. What songs do they play, though, at the
Well, they're also the new members who play with New Order.
I don't think you include
them. What if
them.
They Reeves Gabrell it?
I think that would be wild, I think. I think that's the classic lineup. That's what you do. Now, let's talk about what they play, though. So they usually play four songs. I think Love Will Tear Us Apart is an obvious choice.
Mm-hmm. Blue Monday.
As is Blue Monday. And then what do we think the other two slots, what would make for a good, or we can make it personal, what would you like to see, Wendy?
Well, I want Bizarre Love, Bizarre Love Triangle.
I think so, too. Yeah.
I want Bizarre Love Triangle to be like...
12 minutes long?
Yes. I want them to make back all the money that they lost on those.
And I do like Ceremony as a choice, because to me it feels like it connects Joy Division and New Order really well.
Yeah, Ceremony, and then I also...
Also, it would be performing at the Ceremony, which might be a little too on the nose, but, you know, for me, I think it works.
And I'm not going to say the name of the song correctly, but it's like Elegy or Elegia. It's
the
instrumental song, but that one is so powerful, and no one is singing. There's something about that would be... I would really love that.
Do you think they would play together? Do you think that it could happen?
That Peter Hook would strap on the bass?
Is there some bad blood?
I mean, there's a lawsuit in there.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't like it.
No, that makes it really tough once it gets to lawsuit territory.
Yeah.
But I could see it happening. I would put it at 50-50.
Okay.
That Peter Hook would...
This is also the guy who thought that maybe, just maybe, Radiohead would come for David Byrne. You know, so...
I like to be positive. I like to be optimistic. What can I say?
I wish the family was getting along.
Me too.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
I don't like it when mom and dad fight.
Yeah, especially given what they've been through.
Yeah.
You would think they could rise above.
Yeah, but the thing is, it really is unfair of the kids to want the parents to be back together, because honestly, what you're talking about is a divorce, and saying, why can't you do
just
it
for
stay,
me? Just yeah. stay together for me.
Right. Just stay married for the kids.
I want to
really
go to the same high
unfair.
School.
Yeah, because you don't know what nonsense the parents have had to go through with each other.
Yes. This very analogy was drawn for us by Darren Hayes of Savage
that's
Garden.
Right.
He's like, yeah, it's like a divorce. I'm never going to get back with this person.
Yeah, and it's unfair to ask. But
come on.
Yeah, but come on.
Let me ask you that. Here's a big question, Wendy. If they get inducted, will you go to the induction ceremony?
Oh, yeah, I would.
Fuck yeah.
Hell yeah, because then the hall exists to her.
Suddenly it's real.
Suddenly it's real.
Yeah, it would be real if they were there.
Who inducts them?
So, yeah, let's talk about that. Who would induct?
Who should induct them?
I would say there's...
Is there anybody in the hall who's like a... What do you think?
Oh, my God. There's so many options. Because look at the people who have actually played with both New Order and Peter Hook. Moby could do it. Mm-hmm. Billy Corgan could do it.
Right.
Mark Lanegan, although I don't think that the Hall of
who
Fame cares about him.
Name recognition, I don't think
who
is there.
Who is Mark Lanegan?
A singer.
A
guy.
Just a straight singer.
I think Bono could do it. I mean, he inducts a lot of people.
Wait,
and he loves
really?
Joy Division.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Bono loves. And you can hear in some of the early YouTube.
Trent Reznor could do it again. He's covered them. But I'm interested in some of the artists who've actually gotten out on stage with them. And that's been like a really momentous moment.
Oh.
I would be interested in Moby or Billy Corgan doing it.
Someone bald.
Yeah,
that's
just a
softball
ball. Just something bald has to do it.
We need a cue ball. A left field choice would be Quincy Jones, who worked with New Order.
Wait,
and
what?
Has a deep respect for them.
Arthur Baker.
Who's that?
He's a producer, so he was really instrumental in the dance sound of New Order. Mm-hmm. So
if Joe doesn't know him, it's not happening.
Joe is a
low threshold for, because he knows a lot of people. So
yeah,
if you can't jump that,
you saw
that's
going
to be
going
a no.
Like, oh wait.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I knew who that was. But usually, when it's they want a star to interact the person. There's a lot of
Jones
options.
Worked with them on what?
I think, I don't know if it was an album or singles, but it was like, towards the...
Did he talk about them at all in his wild interview?
You know, they didn't come up. I think when the subject is Frank Sinatra, Marlon Brando, Richard Pryor, there's not a ton of overlap.
They weren't in any sort of orgy?
Well, if it's, that's an interesting, Hall of Fame question. Would Quincy Jones talk about you?
Yeah.
That would make it a much more exclusive league.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've made it to the Quincy level.
If you've made it to the Quincy level, honey, you're in.
Well, it's exciting to know that you will be joining us at the induction ceremony when they get inducted.
Yes.
And you'll finally care and we'll take a picture of your smiling face. It'll be beautiful.
That sounded like a threat.
Yeah, it is. It 100% is a threat. Wendy, thank you so much.
I'm going to take a picture of your smiling face.
Thank you for doing this. Thank you so much for being a part of this show. We really appreciate it. What a great episode. Anything you'd like to plug, if you want to plug your book
again book.
Or whatever. Where can we find you online if you do that?
So, my book on indie music, which I recommend, don't read the introduction, because actually Peter Hook gave me the best piece of advice that I did not follow, which was bury that introduction. But it's called Empire of Dirt, The Aesthetics and Rituals of British Indie Music. Don't read the introduction. Just start with the chapter called What is Indie?
That's so cool.
That would be my plug.
Love it. And do you do social media, anything like that?
I'm Indie Goddess, spelled incorrectly.
1D, right.
1D. And I do stuff on Halloween, Day of the Dead, yes. Guy Fawkes Day, and Thanksgiving. So if you want to know about that stuff, you can slide into my DMs.
You better believe I'm going to follow.
But only about scholarly issues.
Interested in scholarly DMs, people.
Yeah.
She may spell goddess with 1D, but she wants some scholarly.
No,
stole it. Someone stole the name before I got there.
You should just add 69 at the end.
That's always what you got to do. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at RockHallPod. RockHallPod@gmail.com is the email. If you want Kristen to see it, you're going to have to say that somewhere.
Yep.
Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. Rate and review us 5 stars only. If you're leaving a review because of this episode, you are going to have to say Possum Dixon.
Possum Dixon, obviously.
Somewhere in the review. Thank you to Mike Lloyd for the logo. You see Kim for the music. Thank you to Joey Devine for the equipment. Thank you to Chad Briggs and Dave Schilling for letting us record in the apartment I share with them. And thank you to Pantheon Podcast for hosting us. Thank you again, Wendy. I'm Joe Gazzola.
I'm Kristen Stoddard.
And who cares
about the Rock Hall?
Hey there, this is Tyrell Listen, the host of the band History. A new show that takes a deep dive into the legendary roots rock group, The Band. Perhaps one of the most overlooked groups in music history, went from being a backing band to the legends like Ronnie Hawkins and Bob Dylan to creating some of the most influential music of the 1960s and 70s. The Band is responsible for the back-to-basics approach to rock in the late 60s, foregoing psychedelia and acid pop of the day, and influencing artists like the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and Eric Clapton to bring it back to the roots. This new podcast is here to peel back the curtain on the mysterious group that took the music world by storm. Not with press, fancy magazine covers, or massive tours, but with their music. Come and check it out.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frenino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.